Hey there, and welcome back to Take One, the podcast that brings you just one hospitable page of Talmud each day. Want a feisty story? Today's page, Bava Metzia 22, has got one for you. And away we go. Amei Mar, Mar Zutra, and Rav Ashi happened to come to the orchard of Mari Bar Isaac. His sharecropper came and placed dates and pomegranates before them. Amei Mar and Rav Ashi ate the fruit, but Mar Zutra did not eat the fruit due to the concern that the sharecropper had provided them with the fruit without the approval of the owner of the field. Fair enough. Meanwhile, Mari Bar Isaac came and found them eating his fruit and said to his sharecropper, "Why didn't you bring the sages fruit from those higher quality fruits?" Amei Mar and Rav Ashi said to Mar Zutra, "Now, why is the master not eating the fruit? But isn't it taught in a baraita in a case where the owner of the field came and found him and said to him, 'You should have gone to take the produce of better quality and separate truma, the offering to the temple, from it. If produce of better quality than the produce he had separated is found, his truma is considered truma.'" Here too, it is clear that Mari Bar Isaac approved the actions of his sharecropper. Mar Zutra said to them that this is what Rava said. The sages said that the statement, "You should have gone to take the produce of better quality and separate truma," indicates consent of the owner only with regard to the matter of truma, again, to that donation to the temple, due to the fact that it is a mitzvah and the owner is amenable to having the mitzvah fulfilled. But here, in this incident, it is due to shame that he said this. "Why did you not bring these sages fruit from those higher quality fruits?" He did not really want to give them the fruit. In other words, Mar Zutra is saying, "No, I'm still not eating this, because even though Mari Bar Isaac is sitting here and telling his sharecropper, 'Hey, why didn't you bring them better dates and pomegranates from the really good trees over there?' Guys, he doesn't really mean it. He's just doing this because he feels ashamed." Now look, not a lot is known about our man, Mar Zutra, except that he died sometime around the year 417 in what is today Fallujah in Iraq. But I would be willing to bet a lot that Mar Zutra was a man well accustomed to the fine art of hosting and attending dinner parties, because his insight here is so precious and profound. "Come on, guys," he tells Amei Mar and Rav Ashi. "Our host, Mari Bar Isaac, doesn't really want to throw us a shindig. He's just feeling pressured and ashamed lest anyone say he was not a good host." In a very good book about the meaning of being a host and being a guest, the British writer Priya Basil explained that the word host has ancient Indo-European roots. It comes from the word gosti, which means not only host, but also, ready for this one, guest. And if that wasn't enough symbolism for you, it also means stranger. So hospitality, Basil notes, a word that nowadays has been flattened and dried by the so-called hospitality industry, doesn't mean charging someone $300 for a double occupancy room with two queen-size beds and an espresso machine. It means that there's something much more complicated afoot, some dance between host and guest that, if we're not being careful, could end up with two acquaintances ending up as mutually resentful strangers. It's no coincidence, Basil reminds us, that the same ancient root that gave us the word hospitality also gave us its sister word, hostility. If we're not careful, an invitation to stop by and break bread could easily end up sparking a small-scale war. Why? For this, we return to Mar Zutra. Hospitality, he understood very well, has little in common with that silly fantasy so many of us harbor these days of friends sharing a beautiful meal and laughing effortlessly over some delicious pasta and a few glasses of excellent wine. Hospitality, like diplomacy, is war by other means. The host is obliged to overwhelm the guest with displays of kindness, often ostentatious, and the guest is obliged to reciprocate with praise, often overblown and somewhat insincere. But that, I can already hear some of you objecting, is terrible! It's so fake, man! Isn't the entire point of having friends and enjoying their company not having to stand on ceremony and observe carefully wrought and ridiculous rules? Sadly, the answer is no. Mar Zutra, you see, understands, as the sages of the Talmud all understood, that our modern idea of friendship is thwarted and skewed and all wrong. We expect friendships to materialize effortlessly and magically, and then blossom into something really akin to telekinesis. We want a friend who can read our minds without us even having to speak. We want to feel that we're embraced unconditionally, loved regardless of what we do, and supported no matter what. The rabbis had very different ideas. The purpose of friendships, they believed, was to make us sharper, like two metal blades rubbing against each other. Without this friction, we grow dull and useless. Truly good friends, then, don't just say things like, "Oh, wow, you're so right about that," but rather take time and care to try and prove you wrong, because if and when they do, they would have done you the greatest favor of allowing you to see the error of your ways, correcting them and growing from this experience. A great Talmudic friend is a friend who keeps you on your toes. And to do that, without every conversation ending up in shouting or in tears, you need very clear rules. This is where hospitality comes in. We have clear rules of engagement. We may not want our friends to wander into our orchard and help themselves to our fruit, but when they do, we're obliged to offer them the finest, not because we're charitable or loving or kind or anything like that, but because we are obliged. The dinner table is the battlefield around which our mutually strengthening arguments occur. And as such, it must be governed by very specific rules of engagement that put us in just the right mindset for the task ahead. I imagine Malzuta and his pals finishing their snack and then jumping right into a good quarrel about some halachic question or another. I imagine each of them eager to disprove the other, and I imagine all of them grateful for the opportunity to learn from each other, question their own beliefs, and walk home feeling smarter, more alert, accelerated. So here's hoping your next dinner party has a bit of the Malzuta spirit in it, and that it features that most delightful and precious of all human interactions, a fierce argument for the sake of heaven. This has been Take One. If you enjoy the show, and I hope that you do, then you are really going to love the new book just published by me. It's called How the Talmud Can Change Your Life, Surprisingly Modern Advice from a Very Old Book. You can order it now at your local bookstore or directly from the publisher through the link in this here podcast description or through that big online store whose logo is, you know, a smile. As always, please go rate and review Take One on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. You could get your Take One t-shirts and mugs and other swag at tabletstudios.com, and you could subscribe to our weekly newsletter at tabletm.ag/Take One Newsletter. Take One is a Tablet Studios production. The show is hosted by me, Leah Leibowitz, and is produced and edited by Josh Cross, Robert Scaramucci, Quinn Waller, and Ellie Blyer. Our team also includes Stephanie Butting, Courtney Hazlett, and Tanya Singer. For more information, go to tabletmag.com/takeone or email us at takeone@tabletmag.com. I hope we have made your day a little more Talmudic.